Thanks for coming in, Jenny. It's always good to have you in here in person. And
it's been many years too.
You have been doing it for a very long time. Absolutely.
But you're only 5 minutes down the road, so it's okay.
Yes, it's a good trap for us to have.
I know. It literally is 5 minutes down the road.
Yeah. So how are things in the wine world with you?
Good. We've just got over the holiday busy period. We've put it to bed. It will be published in August, so everyone will hopefully be on tenterhooks knowing what happens back then.
It's a big thing. I mean, you guys probably get a little blasé about it in one way because you've been you've been doing it for a while, so long, you know. But it's a big deal for wineries to go, how many stars, what colour?
Oh, I know it's a big deal. I mean, if they lose a star, if they're not happy particularly with how you've seen their wine or scored their wine, they let you know. They really let you know. So I'm not blasé about it in the least.
Mm-hmm. It's always interesting, you know, that third-party endorsement. And, you know, whether it be a wine show award or a trophy it just seems to be holiday. And it's global. It's not just, you know, we have lots of visitors at Tarawarra and they recognise the points from Holiday One Companion. So, it is. It's a lot of pressure for you guys. So.
Well, and I think, I know that we all take it very seriously, very seriously indeed. We give due diligence to what we do and the, the attention that we give each one.
I'm sure, Sam, people sit out the front of Tarawarra reading up on the wine notes just so they feel they've got some background knowledge on what they're going to see at Celador.
Well, the book's sitting on your desk. Mm. I think that, a lot of people do reference
it's sort of the Bible, isn't it, really?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, there's lots of there's a Real Review and Winefront and, you know, lots of other reviewers out there who are making a great name for themselves as well. But, it is more, I think, I don't want to say commercial, but, you know, it's well known. It's
I like to think that we do appeal to every drinker, every style, every price point. It is increasingly getting a little bit harder to put in some of the bronze medal winning wines because the book is getting so big.
Sheer number,
publishing wise, you can only have certain number of wines.
Certain number of pages as well.
Yeah, you can. Or else the whole thing falls apart.
Yes.
And that's what the website does. It backs it all up.
I don't know how. I mean, obviously, it's important we talk about Holiday Companion, but. So James started that and he was reviewing all the wines himself.
Yes. To go back a little bit, the first books that I used to buy were Angus and Robertson and they were a similar, very loose tasting notes and introduction on a number of Australian and New Zealand wineries. So they were the first books that I recall. And then Sandy Grant of Hardy Grant became friends with James. They had a discussion. James went to Hardy Grant. They became partners in the Holiday Wine Companion. And yes, at the beginning, James did all, it would have been about 5,000, 6,000 wines back then, all by himself. And I remember I used to interview him. I interviewed him in December and he was just gearing up for that period because, as we do now, it basically starts in December. All of your notes have to start coming in between December and the end of February.
Yeah.
That's it. And he did 5,000, 6,000 wines in that period, which is incredibly busy. Plus, there was cricket on and he's obsessed with cricket, so he was kind of dividing his time between tasting wines and watching the cricket. And then he slowly brought in other tasters. Ben Edwards was one of the first and Tyson Stelzer was in there. And then it grew and grew as I think at the height we were doing nearly 10,000 wines. So you need a lot of people for that.
Yeah, you got to share it up.
And different opinions and it's good to have one person's opinion, but I think when you have a proper discussion that you can have in wine shows, that you can have within a tasting panel, it has a bigger and better dynamic to it.
Yes.
How was the tasting, given you've just put the book to bed? You've done the final panel tasting.
Fabulous.
Yeah, I bet.
Fabulous.
Hey. A dream job.
Oh, it is a dream job.
Does,
I
does
love
everyone
it.
Park their ego at the door, do you think, in that company?
Yeah. You have to.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't have a massive ego.
No. No, well, I wasn't saying
I don't think we do because I don't think we see ourselves as any kind of celebrity in the least. Mm. I'm a journalist, and that's what journalists do. They gather information, they make opinions, they have commentary, they do all those things, and that's part of the training that you have. So it's not about you, it's about your reader.
Yes.
And that's always been the case with me. I write for consumers. I am a consumer, but I write for consumers.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, on that note, we need to talk about Roy Moorfield and his contribution to Victorian wine.
And just set the scene, the reason, because Roy passed.
Roy passed away
about
in April.
6 weeks ago. Yeah,
yeah, a little while ago. He was 74. A good innings from that point of view, I think. He started work when he was 19. He started in the wine game at 19 years old. So that is a very, very long time to be devoted and passionate about a subject. And he was a Melbourne lab. He went into banking to start off with. And I always remember he said, why should I make money for other people? I might as well make some money for myself.
Good thinking.
And so when he was in the bank, he started bringing in some wine. Back in those days, he would travel into interstate and bring back bulk wine for bottling, and he would sell it out of his car, go around. I don't know where he went. I suppose he went to some hotels. There weren't too many restaurants.
Like the original wholesaler or distributor.
Bit like, you know, he probably went
Jimmy
to Jimmy Watson's.
That's what that, yeah, yeah.
Totally. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that was a similar thing back then in the 70s.
Well, Jimmy used to take people up to Rutherglen and get a whole lot of stuff and bring it all back in the back of the car.
And they bottle it. Well, in fact, one of Roy's early businesses was this massive building where people would go and bottle and then fill up their cars with the bottles and go home.
Amazing.
And that would last them for the maybe a winter, I don't know, just, you know, a couple of weeks.
Until they need to go back.
Until they went back. And then he buddied up with Ross Duke and they created Duke and Moorfield, very famous wine retailer in Errol Street in North Melbourne. That's where I first met the two of them. They would have Saturday morning tastings. And it was just magnificent going there because Roy was a people person, loved talking about wine, loved showing different wines. And that's every Saturday morning a winemaker would be there or Roy would be there taking you through something to taste. And his timing was absolutely perfect because it was a new generation. They had moved on from fortifieds, which had been the 50s and 60s kind of drink and beer. And they were a little bit more sophisticated. He was also bringing in a lot of French wine because the French franc was so favourable, or the Australian dollar, I suppose, was so favourable.
Yeah.
So he'd bring in French wine. Melbourne was becoming a very, very, well, potentially a sophisticated food and wine capital. Mm. And he personally made that happen, I think. I think Melbourne owes him a huge thanks for what he did. He educated people, and not just about wine, although that was his main feature or interest, but when he created the Exhibition of Victorian Winemakers in 1979, he latched on to very, very early on that Victoria was basically, essentially, cooler climate. Because we were all fascinated by South Australia, Barossa, Clare Valley. We were, to a degree, fascinated by the Hunter Valley.
Yeah.
And he saw the potential that lay in cooler climate wines because he was a French wine drinker.
Yeah.
And so the Exhibition of Victorian Winemakers brought a lot of people from these cooler climates that were also starting out in wine. So then you have the Yarra Valley in particular, Geelong. Macedon, and you have names that started at the Exhibition of Victorian Winemakers that I met early on that are now legends. You had Neil Robb at Redbank. You had Daryl and Nini Sefton at Geelong Idol Vineyard. Maybe not a name or names that you remember now, but they were huge for so long and helped you know, rekindle that Geelong wine industry. You had Stuart Anderson at Balgownie.
Yeah.
You had Dominic Porte at Tultani. You had Gary Farr at Bannockburn in Geelong. These names are rightly famous and well regarded. This is where they started showing their wines to Victorians and Melbourne people in particular.
Coming to town to show their wares.
Yeah. It was 4 days.
They were just given a voice because otherwise they were unheard of. Really?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, yeah, because people weren't going out to the region to find them.
And they didn't want to have cellar doors, a lot of them as well, because they were, you know, one man band, one woman band. And they, so Roy, I can remember, you know, at being fairly young and going to these Victorian winemakers exhibitions and just being blown away at the calibre and the quality and just the characters behind the names. So.
Those
were unreal shows, weren't they? I went for years.
Importantly, too, I found out, which I never, I just kind of took it for granted. He said everyone would have the same size
stand.
Mm. And in the past, you had big companies spending big amounts of money on their fabulous looking stands, and the little guys, you know, with the little cardboard table, everyone was equal, which. Yeah. I only thought about later on when it was pointed out to me, but he saw that as very important, where everyone was the same, and so you weren't persuaded to go to the big flashy.
Yeah.
You started at A and you worked your way through B, C and D and you went around the room until you finished.
Yeah.
And he also recognised, that's when he started having masterclasses and, you know, all these individual tastings and things that you could do when you went to the exhibition, that was all his idea. Mm. And that was part of the education that he gave Melburnians and Victorians in general.
Mm.
Amazing concept.
Yeah.
And it ran for 30 years.
I know.
30 years.
Before his time, almost, and just his charisma around, I think that's the thing, he brought a lot of personality to wine and made it really interesting.
His funny little bow ties.
Yeah.
And his little smile.
You know, as I said, as a younger person, you'd look at him and you're always curious about him. Like, I'd love to understand, you know, what his childhood was like. And maybe we're not to know that, but... yeah, it would be, you know, that curiosity around food and wine and the love for Victoria was, so grateful.
Do you know if any other states did a similar thing around that time, or was it quite unique to Victoria?
Quite unique. Yeah. No, very unique. That was all Roy. That all came out of his head. He was the most creative, imaginative person about so many things, but wine in particular. No one else could see that. He saw the potential in winery tourism, which was then taken up by Victoria, and Victoria was a leader in winery tourism because he knew that part of the education for consumers was going to the vineyard, was visiting the cellar door, and that's because we also had this quite a large number of wine regions so close to Melbourne that there was potential there. You could do a day trip to the Yarra Valley, Mornington Peninsula, Macedon, Geelong. Yeah. You could visit some cellar doors. You could educate yourself. You could talk to the winemaker. I won't say he created winery tourism, but that was a central aspect and follow-on from the exhibition. Hugely important.
Well, it's the first step, isn't it? It's bringing the cellar door to town, effectively, as a concept, and then you love the characters and the wines, and so therefore you go and visit them at home. You know, that's how. The, that's what happens now, and
still the same.
I
mean,
I think probably the shows aren't put together. There's nothing like it now.
No,
to capture all of Victoria in one room, where you get and. You know, as you're saying, that's us emerging as a table wine drinking society, I guess, around that time. And you know, to have all of those different styles all in the one spot to kind of go, well, I really like that, so let me find another cool climate Shiraz somewhere else.
Oh, you could
but I don't really
concentrate
like
on Pinots. You could concentrate on Shiraz. Mm. You could visit a whole heap of fortified producers and drink fortifieds or taste fortifieds.
Yeah.
Not drink, of course. Yeah. Over the course of
and then how else would you do that? Well, you can't, because a bottle shop can have a small version of that, but
not the full range.
Yeah.
No.
So
no. And just very important. Yeah. And then of course a duck crawl. He married a Hong Kong lady and he went to Hong Kong all the time. He loved Chinese food. And so he started the duck crawl for the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival. Amazing. With Pinot in your glass and you go around to all these restaurants and taste all these different Pinots and duck dishes. Amazing man.
Yeah.
They were all his ideas. He was always thinking. Amazing man.
Yeah. And I think the fact that, he loved that and he wanted to share it with people.
Very much a people person. He didn't have kids. They didn't have kids. He was out all the time. He just lived at restaurants. Yeah. A lot of restaurants.
Lucky thing.
But you'd go out to dinner with them and they just knew exactly what to order. He was a big rosé person. He started the rosé revolution.
Yeah.
Again, his idea.
He will be missed.
Yes. Well, hopefully we can take some of his learnings and develop other parts and bring things, back.
He brought food and wine together.
Yeah.
I mean, I know, this is kind of second nature now, but there are so many creative aspects that still haven't been discovered. Mm. And you could feed off that, I think, from what he did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The same premise and just in a, 30 years on?
Yeah.
More, isn't it? It's probably 40-something years on. Well, 79 you said, didn't you?
Yeah, but it went for 30 years.
Yeah, so that's like 45 years ago nearly, all it is, roughly. Yep. So, but the same theory works. It's people want to try things and they want to make, and if we make it easy for them and accessible price-wise, then they will, right?
Yeah. I think it was quite interesting too how he evolved, Roy. So he got involved with Cafe Pacific.
Yeah, he was a consultant, a wine. In fact, he did invite me around a couple of times in the early days. He would have all the wines there in his house and he would do the tastings there for selection of wines for flights on Cathay Pacific. I think it became a little bit more sophisticated after that. Mm. He was always going to Hong Kong to do tastings and things, but he was a long-term consultant to them on their wine lists in the sky. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
I had him on, I was telling Sam, I've had him on a few times, and one of the stories I loved was those when he had those wines in Melbourne, having a look at them and he'd shortlist them and these are the ones I'm going to take to Hong Kong for the panel tasting. And others come in from other regions with their wines. And he said, we'd get there. And I go, what the hell did I think of that? What did I think was good about that wine? I brought it over here. It tastes like rubbish. And he said, it took us a while, but we finally worked out that the micro vibrations in the aeroplane are the same as bottling a wine and the bottle shock that it gets. Mm-hmm. And because he was flying it up there to taste it in the next day or two, it didn't have time to come back together. So certain wines would break apart and he said there was no rhyme or reason to style or vintage or producer. He said, it was just a thing that happened. But once they realised it, then they could account for it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But, allowing Victorian wines or, giving that exposure again to people catching the international flights I can remember how excited the first, producer that I worked with that got chosen for Cafe, and it's just, again, that sort of accolade or that third-party endorsement that you're doing a good job and, very important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And exposure, just the exposure that you get on a flight.
Totally,
Yeah.
Just hope people remember your brand. Valet Roy Moorfield, hey?
Yes.
So, yes, hopefully we do remember him in some big way. Well, he's already a legend.
He is a legend of the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival. I would like something else recognised.
Statue we'll have to, with a wine glass.
I don't know about a statue. I don't think that's him, but I'm sure that something.
Especially Victorian producers. I don't know.
Yeah.
Award.
Potential.
Some tourism award, really. It seems like it needs to be, really.
I think so.
Advocate for that.
Yes. Righto. There you go, Jenny. There's you.
I've got to work on that one.
You need to champion that one.
Okay.
Now, you wanted to chat also about James?
Yes. Big news. Big news.
James this week Halliday.
James Halliday. There's no one else like him.
No.
And oh, James is retiring. Enough, actually, certainly in the context of this show. But
Anyway, James Halliday. long-term wine writer, educator, wine producer, wine judge. I'm probably leaving out a few things there. Has retired, announced his retirement this week. I thought it was, again, a bit like Roy, that you've got someone who is so big on the Australian wine scene, who seems to have been there forever, and then suddenly they're going to go into retirement. He will be continuing to write a book.
What's the book
that he's writing? It's a Single Bottle Club.
Oh, yeah.
Which he has been a part of, again, close to 50 years, I suppose. Would have started in the 1960s when he was a lawyer in Sydney. And very special wines. And he made, as James tends to do, it's the lawyer in him, I'm sure, made notes on every single event. And so he's bringing back some of those notable wines in to talk about, write about in a book that Hardy Grant will be publishing. He hasn't given himself a deadline, fortunately, so he can actually take as much time as he likes. But now he will have, I think, time to do it. Certainly he was tasting wine for the guide this year. So,
amazing.
I mean, how many people at 85 can continue to do that kind of intense work throughout the year? He would still be going to tastings until recently. I don't know whether he still wishes to do that, but, you know, every tasting, interstate visits, he was there. So I do wish him very well in retirement. But again, like Roy, it pays to actually look at the contribution that they made to a number of areas. I think whether it's winemaking, I think it's not necessarily recognised enough that he came to the Yarra Valley in 1985 for Pinot Noir,
yeah,
I should say. The Yarra Valley had based its reputation on Cabernet. People were making Cabernet.
Mm.
Peter McMahon went out on a limb to make Shiraz.
Yeah.
And was a little bit castigated by some producers.
A little bit, unfortunately.
So imagine James comes to the Yarra Valley and wants to do Pinot.
Mm.
And I thought he pioneered Pinot. I think he pioneered Pinot Noir in the Yarra Valley. And it's the major wine produced there.
Yeah.
Well, it's most celebrated wine after Chardonnay.
Exactly. Mm. Thank goodness. And so, he's inside.
That's James. Mm. He loved Pinot Noir. Mm. He loved Burgundy. He has a house in Burgundy. He understands Pinot Noir, like very few do. And I think that needs to also be recognised. Of course, he was a major communicator on wine through his books, and I've got almost all of them. And I love his writings, but I think it also pays to have a think about the other contributions that he made. And certainly Chardonnay and Pinot Noir, I think he has contributed to a better quality all round, has helped Australian consumers and producers understand those two varieties much better because of his own knowledge of Burgundy that he has applied. Some people might say that he applied it too literally, but I think he at least had the groundwork there that he shared then with other producers, people like Gary Farr, who then started going to Burgundy every year. James was doing Dujac
years before.
So I like to point out that part of it too.
Yeah.
It's not just writing about it, it's actually living it and doing it.
Yeah. It was from my perspective, I met James when he owned Coldstream Hills. And it was a little bit scary meeting him first time. And those beautiful eyebrows. Magnificent. but he was actually quite an amazing marketer. Just had this capacity to remember wines and when he spoke about wine, that he had tasted years and years ago, and just his words of wine were quite amazing, both, verbally and written. But he, yeah, I really enjoyed working with he and Suzanne, and they worked their backsides off at Coldstream. They were hands-on, and you know it, and you know still to this day, being there and seeing that vineyard, a real testament to both of them. But yeah, he was approachable. He's lovely. He remembered the details. He remembered what was important. And so, you know, I see him and he's still got that glint in his eye and, yeah, just his memory around wine and his passion for it. And I think he drags everyone along with it. So, yeah, and look, he's got this, you know, companion and his books that are there.
It's an amazing legacy.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah, it makes me feel a bit slack, actually.
I know.
Like, what have I been doing with my life?
Well, I interviewed him years ago. And he was turning 80 then, I think. And he said he started the morning at 7 a.m. He was in the office, 7 a.m.
Yeah.
He had a triple espresso coffee to start the day. And he would work through to 7 p.m. Mm.
Yeah.
And that was when he was 80.
Yeah, wow. Yeah.
And that was a typical day.
Yeah, the energy. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, hopefully he finds, I mean, obviously he's got the book to write, but... You know,
still busy.
He'll find.
He can do whatever he wants to do, and totally. I think people go, "Yes, James, please come in, do a tasting with us." Yes, I think he can put his hand up should he choose to do anything.
Yes,
yeah. But it's I see him in the Yarra Valley, and yeah, it's always a highlight. So
yeah.
It's, hopefully, we get to see him a little bit more.
Yeah. Yes.
So Jenny, you're heading off to something this afternoon, so we shouldn't hold you up too much.
Yes, well, it's Mother's Day.
And a new grandson.
A new grandson, haven't seen yet.
Wow.
Big cuddles today.
Oh.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, we'll have a beautiful day.
Thank you.
So down to Mount Duneed.
Mount Duneed, yes. Yeah. Armstrong Creek, which is just outside Mount Duneed.
Fantastic.
See the two young lads.
Yeah.
Be very nice. So happy Mother's Day too.
So. Thank you.
Start with little bubbles and when you get down there?
No, because I'm driving, or we're driving. No alcohol today. But more coffee. I'll always have more coffee. That'll be very nice.
What I've never asked you, what do you really enjoy drinking? What
anything?
Okay. Well, I sort of thought that might be the case.
Yeah. As long as it's good.
Yeah.
That's all I want.
Yeah.
That's all I ask for.
It's a good answer. it's something you'd get asked a lot too. It's,
yeah, it's
like what's your favourite style?
It's
sort of the right tool for the job in many respects. It's, you know.
I would drink a Sauv Blanc. I mean, this is the other thing. People, oh, yeah, I hate Sauv Blanc. I hate rosé.
You can't say that.
No, you can't. Because I love them all as long as they're good.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's all I want.
Exactly.
Yep. Yeah. If you're putting a hate against something you haven't explored,
that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, you can't be a wine writer and hate anything.
Correct.
Don't have an open mind.
Before you disappear, I've got one question from Christopher, and thank you for texting in, Christopher. Anyone else? 0456-965-965. Christopher is heading to Clare in 3 weeks, and he wants you to help him navigate to some of the lesser known wineries that are of note to in your opinion, where should he go? That's kind of maybe a little off the beaten track. He says, what does he say? Lesser known wineries.
Shut the gate.
I hope you're taking notes, Christopher. I'm sure you are.
Oh, now you're going to push my brain.
Shut the gate.
Shut the gate. There are a couple. Jeez, it's a bit early in the morning, Christopher.
Sorry. Well, there's one to start with.
Wine open either.
I know. See.
You probably have a look through the book, I guess, as well.
Yes, yeah. Christopher, if you've got the Halliday Wine Companion.
Because you have the rising stars and all of those sorts of categories in the book, so that helps you kind of navigate
to those.
You know,
the minute I get in the car,
you'll rattle them all off. Yeah, we'll just text us and we can tell him.
Well, that might be an idea too.
There's one to start with. But there's some really interesting ones, isn't there? It's Claymore, isn't it? The one that has song titles in their wine labels. As in the based on song.
I've only seen a couple of Claymores.
Yeah, something like that.
You're pushing it, Simon.
Oh, really obscure, but anyway.
There's, Mintaro, there's a lot. I always go to, you know, Pikes and Jim Barry.
Because they're the ones I've always been drinking. I am a little bit more.
I think probably what...
Traditional.
Sometimes you go and I've got to go and see all the ones I've seen before.
Yeah.
And then you go... We'll never run out of time.
I know.
So really, yeah. I need to add another day to add the new ones
go
in.
Go to the local pub and ask them and they'll quickly tell you where to go.
Yeah, go to the Watervale Hotel. They've got a good program there.
And you can taste them all there.
And they have lots of small wines.
Exactly.
Wineries there,
wine hub.
That is. Well, there's your answer.
There you go. Jenny endorses the Watervale Hotel as a really good stop to have a look.
Yeah, definitely.
And their food.
And their food.
They've got like a home garden thing out there.
It's amazing.
Well,
one of the best
garden
pubs in Australia.
Yeah, there's a couple of journalists who hang out there as well, I believe.
Well, yeah, that could be off-putting, but think about it on the brighter side.
Yeah. Well, there is a there's actually a cell. Well, there was.
There is.
A cell
no, it's still
out the
there.
Back.
The cell is still there.
So they used to lock up people who just revelled a bit too much and until the police came and picked them up. That's where the journalists got put at the end of the night. Yeah.
Oh, no.
That's where they deserve to be.
Oh, dear.
Thank you for coming in.
See ya.
Safe travels down to lunch.
Thank you.
And enjoy your Greg.
If I think of anything, I'll text it through.
Do
I? Thank you.
Thank you, Jenny. So Jenny Port needs no further introduction than that. That's three legends. We just talked of two and we sat with one. So
I know. I could have interviewed Jenny. She's quite a fascinating person. She's just great. And her energy around wine, she sat on our committee, or I think she still is on the committee for the Melbourne Royal Wine Awards. And, great contributor to what we do.
Yeah. Oh, totally. And just as... it's always an honest appraisal of things from Jenny.
Yeah.
We've chatted about things on here and it's just, no holds barred. It's great. And that's what you want, really.
Yeah.
It's not, there's no point just writing the spin that a wine company wants you to put out there.
No.
It's actually navigating through all of that haze of it and kind of going, well, this is kind of okay, but this is really good.
Yeah.
They're trying to tell me to push this one up because it's a slower seller. Well, nah.
No.
I'm not going to do that to people.
No. And I think she's always advocated for women in wine, which is, in a industry that has been previously dominated by men. She's just been amazing, very supportive of everyone. She's great.
Given, you're a woman in wine, there's obviously long-standing prejudice and, male chauvinism, I guess. But there's no job in the wine industry that a girl can't do as well as a man, right? And often, from a tasting point of view, often their palates are better.
Yeah, I think it's always the best person for the job and there's nothing that women can't do in the industry.
Yeah.
I think that, there has been, unfortunately, some companies that, haven't taken the right view when it comes to, picking the right person for the role. Mm. So, there's some great winemakers, great viticulturalists, great cellar hands, great cellador, managers,
and
people.
It's been aided in the winery itself where there were once probably heavy lifting jobs and not the equipment to help with that. But also not the OH&S, telling us you can't do that. Even if you're a he-man, don't go and lift that barrel on your own, right?
No.
So therefore a girl and a guy should be able to handle whatever, weight and different things the same, right, using a forklift or whatever. So I don't see anything that says that's a boy's job and that's a girl's job.
No, it's God, just, no. And or you work it out together as a team, even if you're a tiny little winery, there's always a couple of people around to get things done. So,
Oh, absolutely. I think that's awesome. And you mentioned viticulturalists. I'm loving the fact that they're getting lauded these days. So, they're getting their time
in the sun. But it's, so important.
Appreciated.
Mm. Yeah. And there's a real shortage. So, that was one thing. I'd love to, see more kids go into agriculture or, viticulture or whatever it might be. Because, you can have obviously vineyard managers, but people with that real background and understanding of growing vines is so important. So.
I remember last week we had the professor on.
Yeah.
And talking about, you know, what... So that was Paul Gruben.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, he's like, this is a great job for everyone, and yeah. you know, for young people.
Yeah.
And it's a real sort of apprenticeship in a way. You know, you learn and study and then you go and, yeah, really apply that directly. It's
exactly. But it's, you know, it's learning every single day and it's touching the dirt and it's real.
Mm.
And to see your rewards with vintage, it's, yeah, there's nothing like it.
Mm, absolutely.